I certainly think also Michael Olise has had a wonderful start. The Bundesliga is really falling in love with him and just seeing how talented he is. And I think people who watch the Premier League knew that. It's a new thing for Bayern Munich fans.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
US Sport.
On Off the Ball.
With 888 Casino. 18 plus cgamblingcare.ie.
All right, you're very welcome along to this week where we're reflecting on a weekend of madness across the NFL. And we've got the full crew back. Mick, how are you?
Good, sir. Still recovering from even the early games, never mind the Hail Mary and everything after the late games this week.
Yeah. Kian, how are you?
It was really was a great weekend, wasn't it? Sorry, I'm great. I should answer that question really instead of just going straight to...
But it was
such a great weekend because, like, I don't know about the rest of you how you watched it, but I was kind of watching Red Zone and focused on the Dolphins at the time, because of Tua's return. And I didn't even realize that, like, the Bengals and the Eagles had, like, this phenomenal game of football that I saw, like, four plays from. And then watching it back yesterday, you were kind of going, whoa, this was, like, a complete afterthought from the whole weekend, and yet it was still a great game with plenty of storylines in it. So it's kind of, we've hit mid-season form, which is a real good thing in the NFL context, I guess.
On the Red Zone thing, Ger, we all, I think, fell in love with Red Zone when it came first, maybe 10 years ago, and there were some amazing Red Zone Sunday nights. And I do maybe there's a bit of a kind of a movement against it at the moment, like we should be watching games, and I do feel that way sometimes. Like, you know, maybe, you know, you watch it full sometimes when there's three games on in the late afternoon game, great, I'll watch the big game, and you do get such a better sense of everything and so on. So I do understand the slight backlash to it, but this was the first Sunday I can remember in a long time that was the quintessential Red Zone Sunday. It was the first time I thought Scott's not going to make it in quite a while, and I think there's just no better way. There's no better way. When the drama is happening at like four or five places at the one time, all in the last minute of a game, it's just, that was the best NFL Sunday for drama in the last minute that we've had in, I don't know how long, long as I can remember.
We're going to try and get through all this in about 40 minutes. That's our promise to you, the listener, that we will be finished long by the time your commute home is over. So let's start with the drive-by. You want to briefly mention last night? The Steelers beat the New York Giants, not unexpectedly, kind of exactly what everybody anticipated.
Yeah, two similar teams, but the Steelers is a much better version of the Giants at this stage. The thing that kind of stood out was the Calvin Austin, the rookie receiver. He's looked really, really good, and he wasn't someone that was talked about a lot coming into the year. Very quick, very kind of smaller receiver. He's not kind of like the quintessential Steelers receiver, the George Pickens, the Chase Claypools, the Emmanuel Sanders, even the bigger kind of longer receiver guys who work downfield. But he had two massive plays last night in the touchdown and the punt return. But that was not the difference between the two teams, obviously. The Steelers defense there is obviously still incredible, but it's so deflating watching the New York Giants and the state of them as a franchise, because Daniel Jones, and this is something I've looked at over recent weeks, not just last night, but it was there last night as well for the key fumble that essentially decided the game. He has this awful tendency to drop back in the pocket and just wait to be sacked. He's moving around, looking down, waiting for the pass rush to come and hit him, and it's completely shutting that offense down. Like, Malik Nabers had 7 for 71 last night, I think. Darius Slayton went over 100 yards, but it's not getting these guys consistent ball, consistently fed. And like, if you're talking about a team that's a quarterback away right now, I think it probably isn't necessarily the Giants, but they're the team that would shoot the highest up if you added a proper quarterback to them. And it's just that danger of sticking to what you know and getting comfortable with a quarterback when he's young and then giving him that second deal. It's really killed the franchise.
There's no hope for him. Is there any possibility that he turns into one of those late bloomers who gets a bit of game sense? Because he can move.
Has his moments, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think like the obvious comparison is always Alex Smith, but at least when Alex Smith was at his bad times and his low ebb, he was at least trying to throw the ball. I feel like Jones is someone who's just terrified of getting or making a mistake, or terrified of making the wrong play. Now, look, it could be a situation like that. But if we're talking about just the Giants' perspective, I don't think that happens in New York at this point. It happens somewhere else. So for them, it's not really any positive outlook or any reason to be optimistic.
Is Russell Wilson going to do a Joe Flacco on us here and come back from the depths of hell to be a decent NFL quarterback again? Maybe he won't be the Russell Wilson of 10 years ago, but if he's anywhere close to it, then he's going to be very, very viable.
Well, if we go back about 14 months now, we can remember Sean Payton talking about how the coaching was the reason Russell Wilson was bad and why he was going to unlock Russell Wilson and make him great. And maybe Sean Payton was right, but the coach needed to be Mike Tomlin and not Sean Payton. So, because they're getting the most out of him. And like, we talked about the decision to bring in him in over Justin Fields last week, and it's been justified. You can't go back against it at this point, even if the offense isn't scoring a lot. And this is actually... it's something I was going to get, a point I was going to touch on later when we talk about the Titans and how that game went against the Lions. But and it's kind of not even an original idea, because it's coming across all of sports, like basketball, Gaelic football, soccer. The lack of diversity in approaches right now is creating these teams where very few of them are winning while running the ball and playing defense. So it makes the Steelers this massive outlier. But it is possible to do it. It is possible to ride a hot defense, ride a good running game, and a big, big key for them, which Russell Wilson can take some credit for, is Najee Harris has been a much better running back since he's been in the lineup. He's breaking off these big plays out of nowhere. And now, this is a small detail, but the quarterback plays a role in setting up running plays. The quarterback plays a role in, right, we've got this run play call that's going into a brick wall on the defense. I'm going to change it, make this slight adjustment, so we're going to run this way instead. So sometimes when it's a situation that the quarterback comes in and suddenly the running game is better, you can kind of go, sure, that's got nothing to do with the quarterback. You can't credit him for that. But sometimes it can. And Russell Wilson spent a long time with Marshawn Lynch in Pete Carroll's offense, making those adjustments, making those decisions. So there's a security and a safety in relying on him that probably wasn't there with Fields.
When we get to this stage of the season, you know, the records are largely beginning to reach a point where you believe in the team. You know, there's been exceptions in recent years where teams got to 7 wins after 8 or 9 games, like they're not real. But the 6-win teams at the moment are Buffalo, Green Bay, Washington, Houston, Detroit, and Pittsburgh. I'm kind of surprised, I've got to say. That's pretty good.
And more important than that, they're ahead of the Ravens in their division.
Yeah, and they like, there's nothing that you think, oh, that's going to fall apart.
Am I right in saying, and I haven't got it in front of me, and I'm literally just going off very, very quick memory here, am I right in saying they've had a very favourable schedule?
Well, so
to start off with?
I can probably click on this and tell you exactly. It hasn't been incredibly harsh, but I wouldn't say I don't believe
it.
It hasn't
been too easy either. Yeah, no, I don't think so either. I think they're going to make the playoffs at this stage, and I think if Wilson is a consistent upgrade, I suppose. He certainly is at the moment over Fields, and they actually have some danger in the air, and they can release these receivers that that Keane's talking about, then they're going to be even better, and their defense is so, so good. And if they don't lose TJ Watt the way they did last year, they're going to make the pass. I still kind of feel like when it comes down to it, the Ravens are probably a better team than them, just talent all over the field.
Yeah.
So you wonder, is this second, third round playoff team as opposed to just a playoff team?
Well, the thing is that because there's only one team who gets home advantage all the way through, they might end up playing them. I'm trying to work this out off the top of my head now. Is there a possibility they could have home field advantage for that game? It's unlikely.
If they win their division, they have home field advantage guaranteed.
Yeah. So they need to...
In the first round anyway.
Yeah, and the Chiefs will win every game by 3... go 6-17-0, winning every game by 3 points.
So, you know,
so they'll get all the way.
I think a really good barometer for them right now is not the Ravens, but rather the Bengals. Because all of us would have come into the season and said the Bengals have Joe Burrow, they've got Jamar Chase, they've got T. Higgins still. But the Bengals have this kind of soft offense, not soft... ineffective offensive line, ineffective defense. The Steelers are winning in all the areas where the Bengals struggle. So even if they do end up being the second best team in the AFC North, I still don't think that makes them having a bad season or it means they'll miss the playoffs, because I do think they have pieces that will make your life difficult no matter who you are on the offensive side. For example, like the Chiefs, none of us will pick them to beat the Chiefs if they meet in the playoffs. But if you look at the way that Chiefs team has played this year, you look at the way their offensive line is, and you look at the pressure the Steelers can generate, why would you ever think that the Chiefs are going to run away with it? Now, they have Mahomes, so we'll assume the Chiefs will win in the end, but they'd make a better game against the Chiefs right now than the Bengals would, which is saying something, because in the past, the Bengals have been that team that the Chiefs are kind of scared of.
The Commanders, to give them their correct title, would have been only on 5 wins, and the Bears would have matched them on 5 wins were it not for one of the most remarkable plays you're ever going to see. And Hail Mary is not that entirely unusual. They happened once or twice.
2 weeks ago, yeah.
But what makes this totally remarkable is the cornerback waving to the crowd, doing his lap of honour, and it being
his fault,
that it comes off to the only person who doesn't bother jumping and catches the easiest catch he's ever going to catch. It was just that behind the goals footage is some of the best thing you're ever going to see in any sport. If you don't like that, you're dead.
No, if anyone hasn't seen it, like, just go on to Instagram. If you follow anything connected to an NFL account, it will be there on your page because it is shared widely. It's incredible. He has taunted the crowd as the play is on, as the ball is snapped,
and he
is
still looking sideways. Like, oh.
He just wanders into the pile where he puts his hand up and deflects it into the receiver. I can't get over how bad sometimes defensive structure can be around these wild plays. You know, it's just, it cannot be difficult to just flood the zone. You can put literally 9 of your players into the area of the ball. The ball's in the air for 3-4 seconds. You can go to where it's going to land. You know, it's not like you just, I'm in the wrong place.
Yeah.
You know, go to where it's going to land. And how you could all go to the ball together and leave nobody in the end zone guarding guys is just bananas to me. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
I think the one thing we need to note as well, if you've seen that footage that Jarrah's talking about there, you'll notice he's giving a lot of crap to the Commanders fans, the home fans, but there's a section of Bears fans to that side, and they're all at the bottom of the screen, and they're all pointing, the play has started, the play has started, go back to the play, while he's still going at the crouch. But in terms of the structure, yeah, so when I initially saw this play and knew nothing about that cornerback, I was thinking to myself, Hail Mary is always a luck of the draw thing. You can never give the offense too much credit. I know Aaron Rodgers had this incredible ability to get them off at a rate that was higher than everyone else, but it still wasn't a high rate. And the thing that really stood out to me on that play, Jaden Daniels buys so much time. He's moving for so long behind the line of scrimmage that's why that defensive structure comes apart a little bit. In part of, like, obviously the way they set up initially, they should have only cared about the end zone because there was no time on the clock for them to go and kick a... Well, they were more than a field goal behind anyway, I think. But it was always going to be a Hail Mary. So, Nick, you're 100% right. That defensive structure should have been better, and that play should never have happened. That's always going to be the case in a Hail Mary. What's really interesting to me is Stevenson is the cornerback's name, I think. Matt Eberflus came out straight away after the game, was like, yeah, Stevenson's responsibility on that play was to take Noah Brown out at the back of behind the pile. He's the guy who's supposed to be there waiting behind the pile. And you're like, one, yeah, that's crazy from the cornerback, but your head coach coming out and saying that straight away, I'm guessing this guy has wound Eberflus up more than once in the past, and this is not going to be one of those situations where it's like, oh, it's a one-off. This is someone whose character is just this way anyway. But finally, just Noah Brown. Noah Brown, to me, is one of these, you're never going to call him a great receiver, but he's a guy who's going to be in the NFL for more than 10 years, and you can understand why. Like, when he was the wide receiver 4 for the Texans last year, he consistently overplayed relative to where he was on the depth chart. His intelligence to just drift back into the end zone, that has to be given massive credit for, because when you have that massive pileup and everyone's being drawn to the ball, your instinct tells you, yeah, go and try and win the ball. And he's just like, okay, this ball could deflect anywhere, I'm going to linger in behind. And the defensive backs are taught to knock the ball forward away from the end zone, but they obviously didn't in that situation. And he caught the ball perfectly. So give Noah Brown credit, give Jaden Daniels credit, but ultimately it is kind of a laugh at the Bears' day, really, isn't it?
Yeah, Caleb Williams is good, though. The Bears have a team. The Bears have 4 wins after, you know, being a complete joke franchise for basically decades.
And could have had 6. You know, like they lost a hilarious game to the Titans in week 1, and they obviously lost a Hail Mary this time. They could be 6-1. You know, and it wouldn't be ridiculous. I think we'd be talking about them in a different way than we're talking about the Steelers.
That's the Titans' only win, by the way. They're 1-6.
Yeah, yeah. We'd be talking about it in a different way than we talked about the Steelers, for sure. I don't think they're on that level, but they've got a really, really good defense, and they've got some really good pieces. Like, I mean, if Williams steps up to the level, that offense could be scary, because Swift is playing well now. You've got those 3 receivers who can all do different things. It's good. It's a good team, like the Bears. That division is insane. You mentioned it there. It's like, there's a... You know, they could have won that game, and all the teams would be on 5 wins at least. Green Bay have started really, really well. Obviously, Minnesota have. They've been the story of it. Detroit are now doing what we thought they were going to do.
Yeah.
And yet, you would say the Bears are very far, are not even out of the division. Never mind the playoff chase.
We have no chance of getting through this podcast in 40 minutes if we keep getting it. So we've done one talking point so
we
far,
never do.
And a quick recap of last night. So you said you watched the Dolphins game. Was Tua good? Was he okay? Did he look healthy?
He was all right. He didn't seem like, it wasn't obvious signs of, like, you're not going to get obvious signs of concussion, but it wasn't like he was falling away and hiding from hits and stuff like that. But he was kind of playing his normal game. It was notable how incredibly conservative the offense was. They tried to take a shot play early in the game, and Tua had the ball knocked out as he was stepping up in the pocket. That was their first of four fumbles slash muffs. Sometimes there was muffs in there, which is when you actually don't have possession of the ball at all, which is what led to a safety when the center snapped the ball a little bit high and a little bit fast, and Tua couldn't grab it, which was very important at the end of the game because it brought the Cardinals back into within one. It was 8 points, I believe. So he was pretty good, like he was pretty solid relative to expectations to what he's been previously, but he wasn't able to make a screen pass that kind of decided the game, where the Cardinals sent this massive blitz and he had the opportunity to just flip the ball outside, and it probably would have been a touchdown and they would have gone two scores ahead with 5 minutes left in the game, and it would have been it was kind of the decisive moment, and the Cardinals ultimately went back and won it. The overall thing with it though is like the Dolphins are just not the offense they were before. As much as they still have most of the pieces, they still have Achane, they still have Mostert, they still have Hill, they still have Waddle. You're not getting the same production out of that group. And now the quarterback is back, you're expecting them to explode a little bit more. We'll see how it goes moving forward, but right now it doesn't look like it's going to be what we thought it was or what it was previously.
They're 2-5. Obviously, they're in the same division as Buffalo, who are 6-2, so they're not going to catch them. Is there a possibility they turn things around and win, reel off 8-9 of the next 8-9 games?
It's hard to see, isn't it?
So what happens here? Because they have the quarterback. They spent a lot of money on him. There was maybe a chance for him to retire. That hasn't happened. They're going to be picking in the top 10 as things stand. Do they move on a quarterback?
I don't think they will, but like I think they should. But I thought they should before all the concussion issues anyway. I never rated Tua as that highly of a quarterback. I think the biggest cheer in that game yesterday was when he scrambled and then slid to protect himself. But that's never been the concern with Tua. He always has protected himself when he's had a 10-yard run-up. He can see everyone. He's out in space. He's already past the first down line. The problem with him is when he's in the middle and he starts running into bodies in the middle of the field when there's a crowd around him and he doesn't think to get down. Like, if we jump back quickly to Caleb Williams yesterday, he had a play against the Commanders where he had the opportunity to scramble on a 3rd and 2 and get the first down. And as I was kind of writing back and analysing the game, I kind of broke that play down from two perspectives. One, I want my quarterback to get the first down on 3rd and 2. We had an opportunity to run straight for the first down and with a defender coming from the side. Now, he wouldn't have taken a big hit. He probably would have dived forward and the defender would have fallen across his legs or something like that. But what he did was stopped and slid right at the line of scrimmage so that the offense had to punt, but he didn't take any contact from anyone. Now, if you're a Bears fan, you can go, right, that's my rookie quarterback. I'm protecting him. That's all that matters to me right now. That's the long term. But if you're kind of saying, what should the quarterback do in that situation? When you're trying to win games, you want your quarterback to run and try and get that first down. I don't think now with Tua, you can ever really be confident that he's, one, going to make that decision that the offense needs, that the team needs, and two, if he does he get back up afterwards? Because he's just had too many concussions now. So if they do have a high pick, it's kind of about where they are. Like, I don't see them being as bad as the Titans or the Panthers or anyone else. Like, there's a couple of other teams, maybe the Patriots. The Patriots have their moments, obviously. So I don't think they'll get the first overall pick, but they'll probably be 5th, 6th, or 7th. And then you're talking about, give us the best offensive lineman on the board and we'll protect our quarterback. And they go into that road, which never really works out.
Yeah, I don't know how many quarterbacks there are in next year's draft either. Do Carolina still not have a pick? Is this the last year? Are they
they're
done, are they?
They're back to having a first round pick next year, as far as
the first overall pick. It looks like
they bloody need it.
So Anthony Richardson, you are on an island about this, except you're the only one who thinks he's any good.
Yeah, and I'm really, really frustrated that I'm hearing they're talking about benching him. It's madness, because if you go back in that game, look, he started the game 2 of 15. There's no defending 2 of 15, obviously, except that 3 of his first 5 throws were blatant drops on great plays. And then he had 3 dropped touchdowns and another touchdown ruled out by a penalty that had nothing to do with him. Like, he's what we were talking about earlier when I was saying every team is playing the same style. He's that prototype quarterback you had in the past where he's going to push the ball downfield. If we run the ball properly and take shots, we'll build this incredibly good offense. But the Colts are building an offense where he drops back and throws short 5 times starting the game. Like, they threw the ball over and over and over again. Whenever they gave the ball to Jonathan Taylor, whenever they ran the ball and set up to run first rather than set up to pass first, they were a really effective offense. Yet Shane Steichen is there and he's just like, that's not the offense I want to run, which is very confusing because he comes from Philadelphia where they were able to do that. And he's just trying to force feed him into this like Kirk Cousins style catch and release spread offense. It just doesn't work. Right. And the worst part of that game, where both quarterback and coach deserve criticism, with 28 seconds left in the second quarter, they're deep in their own territory. They have a second down throw, second and eight, I think it was, doesn't really matter. But they're right on their own goal line and they call a play where it's all curl routes and they have no timeouts, by the way. It's all curl routes. Richardson drops back in the pocket, throws the ball wide left to his curl route. He's a little bit late. Defender undercuts it, drops the interception. And you're like, one, okay, if that pass is completed, if that play works as it's supposed to work, you've got maybe 6 yards with another 80 to go before you're going to score. Why are you doing that with 20 seconds left? So you're thinking, okay, you got lucky. You got away with the drop interception. Get out of there. Don't do anything worse now before the end of the half. What to do in the next play? Call the exact same play. Make the exact same throw, get intercepted, give the offense a touchdown, and give the Texans a touchdown, and you're wondering, what's the thought process here? Why are you taking a massive risk for a reward that gets you nothing? Literally just runs the clock out the same way you would have to hand the ball off. So the Colts as a whole, I think, are majorly in trouble, and I don't think it's the quarterback's fault. Please remember, this quarterback is still about, what, 10 games into his career? He's still 21 or 22 years of age. Yeah. This is a guy who needs to be time to develop and put in the right situation, and the Colts are not the right situation right now.
I suppose the slight counterpoint to that, and I don't have as strong an opinion on Richardson as you do, the slight counterpoint is the AFC is so weak, and we're talking about like the likes of Denver or even not giving up on like the Jets or Miami or whatever, you know, because there's just, there is outside of Pittsburgh, Baltimore, maybe the Chargers, Chiefs, the Bills and the Texans, there's two spaces up for grabs there for two bad teams and, or one spot anyway, for a bad team. So they could still make it. So then you say, does Flacco give me a better chance now? I don't know, I think that's questionable. One thing on it though, in terms of machismo NFL and it all coming down to it, he made a decision in that game that's got an awful lot of press of, after a long, long run, he took himself out and he said, oh, I wasn't hurt, I was tired. And it's like, he's like being, you know, the usual talking heads. He's a quitter, he's this, that, the other. You never pull yourself out of the game, you never do this. So I was like, I'm sure he was able to stand there and hand the ball off to Jonathan Taylor. He made a decision because he wasn't up to what, they have a good backup quarterback, you can come in and not waste the play. Do you know what I mean? It's this idea that like every time you do something like that, you're a, you know, you're not an old school footballer. Yeah. You're all the names that people will call you. It's just, it's so, I don't know. They're just in the stone ages sometimes in that sport.
He's also taken a lot of hits to that point in the game. So you can't really like, the other way, sometimes one quarterback, he might make one run in a game. And if he was like not been hit a bunch, or if he hadn't made a bunch of carries already to that point, I think like, that you'd get the criticism then, because it's like it's not like you've had 20 carries. He has a lot of carries. He takes a lot of hits, and he's a really big body as well. So when he does break off a big run, that's a lot of moving weight. I to be honest with you, I don't think anyone would care about that at all if they'd won the game. I think it's all about the frustrations of the offense as a whole. But you're right about the overall kind of macro aspect of this. The whole NFL machismo thing still exists, really.
The Eagles beat the Bengals. We've mentioned this briefly. The Eagles have been something of a joke for many people, and yet here they are 5-2.
Yeah, I was kind of, because I think we were quite harsh on them early in the year as well, and Jalen Hurts took a lot of that criticism. I think Jalen Hurts is not necessarily the reason why they're 5-2 or why they've gotten better, but I think AJ Brown coming back and Devonta Smith still being there, like the touchdown catch he had against the Bengals this week was outstanding. The throw was pretty damn good as well from Hurts, so you've got to give him a lot of credit. But they've got that identity back where they can do those shot plays, where they can take those big play action heaves downfield. And Saquon Barkley, like Mick said it, I think it was week one, Mick was talking about how good Saquon is, and like he's just carrying that offense. The plays he's making are simply phenomenal. There's like, we all know him as this elusive, explosive running back, but there's a play from the weekend where he gets out on the edge, and this is where a real sign of how healthy Saquon Barkley is now compared to previous years. He lowers his shoulder and the defender comes out across to try and hit him. And I think it's a safety, so it's not necessarily a weak cornerback, but it's not like a big linebacker either. But the safety has him perfectly lined up. Saquon lowers his shoulder, and not only does he break the tackle, he bounces the defender across his face, so the defender goes over the sideline, while Saquon basically never slows down. It's a bit like a cartoon, where he's still going forward, crossing the first down line, and he's just exploding down the sideline. So the quality in that offense is unbelievable. And then defensively, Nolan Smith, Jalen Carter, they won a couple of titles at Georgia, I believe. Carter's the defensive tackle, Nolan Smith's coming off the edge. That pass rush just ate Joe Burrow up. Now, Joe Burrow's offensive line is not the best, and there's going to be a lot bigger tasks for the Eagles' pass rush. But as a defensive front, they're just swarming the pocket. They are constant pressure generated on the opposition passer, and the secondary in behind is playing pretty well too.
I'm on the tankathon to see who has the first pick and who has the last pick of the first round. And Philadelphia currently have the 24th, so they're the eighth best record at the moment. I know, obviously, they're not in the same conference, but they're ahead of Baltimore and Denver in the standings. They're ahead of Atlanta. They're ahead of the Chargers in Arizona. So, like, they're the best of all of those teams at the moment, overall records. And they're just behind Minnesota on the standings. So, like, this is a good record. And this is a team who, obviously, at the end of last year, collapsed. But before that, everything had gone right for them. And everybody said,
yeah,
look at the Wild collection. Harry Rosen's a bit of a genius, is able to put together these teams. I mean, got rid of Javon Hargreave at exactly the right moment in his career as well.
Yeah, but they'd lost, you know, one of the greatest centers of all time, and, you know, like, that's going to take some adjusting to. And then also, their quarterback play just has not been good enough. But as Keane mentioned, like, everything else in that team is ready and set up to win. We also know that Jalen Hurts has it in him.
That's it.
Whether he's a long-term good quarterback or not, I think we're all probably on the doubtful stage now. But can he put a run together where he actually is a decent NFL quarterback? And that makes them a deep in the playoffs team if Hurts becomes that level. With that level of receiver, the level of the running game now especially. Like, I mean, Saquon's backups are chomping through the defenses now as well when they get in as well. Like, you know what I mean? There's a lot of talent on that team. Like,
Jalen Hurts also 26, you know, so,
and he's running the ball better. You know, like, if that he can continue that even for.
Did we find out afterwards that he was badly injured at the end of last season? Was there something else that you don't
talk of it, isn't there? There's always kind of murmurs that Hurts is always hurt. Yeah.
Okay, the Rams upset the Vikings. Matthew Stafford linked with a potential trade briefly last week, and then comes out and throws four touchdowns and has them at a point where they are definitely going to believe they can win the division. They can go on a run, and, you know, would you put them up against Detroit right now? Probably not, but maybe by the end of the season, when all their receivers are fit, all of a sudden you look at this and, again, a team who knows what it's actually like to go and win.
Yeah, I think this was a massive game for them, not for different reasons, but the main one is, I think if they lost this game, you might have started to entertain trades and started looking at trades. But because you have a quarterback on Stafford's level and with his experience, and, like, he come back from a major injury late in his career as well, so you've got to give him a lot of credit. But the level he played at last week, you're going to be able to beat anyone. I know the big focus on this game is the non-called face mask at the end that got the safety to end it. But to be honest, there was a bunch of other plays in there as well where the Vikings kind of got screwed a little bit.
That's
on
insane. Calls. But, have you seen this? I don't know if you saw it, right? So he literally gets his face pulled to the side. They give a safety. There's no way, there's no possible range of motion that the face wasn't done. He's like, face mask. And they're like, no, we're not reviewing this.
In the end of the game as well. It's great that there's like six refs out there as well. Oh, allows people to lie on everything.
Are you not allowed to review it?
Well, you know the great irony of this is the Los Angeles Rams for the last 3 years. Yeah, but not for everything. You can't review for a penalty on that situation.
Okay.
But the great irony of this is the Rams for the last 3 years have been the only team to put forward that they want face masks to be reviewable and to be able to have that exact play overturned, essentially. And it's been shot down by everyone else every single time. And now they're the one team that's benefiting from it on the biggest stage at the biggest moment. So from the Rams' point of view, they're like, we told you, we tried to stop this from happening. You can't blame us. But besides that, there were a bunch of like defensive pass interference plays, holding calls in it that were very kind of suspect, and they did go in the Rams' favor. But the real story of the game for me was McVay versus Flores. Brian Flores has overwhelmed so many offenses this year with his play calling. He tried to do it against the Rams. He kept trying to do his blitzes. He kept trying to do his aggressive fronts, his stunts and his twists and all that kind of stuff. But McVay was just calling these beautiful misdirection screens left and right. And then when he didn't do that, Stafford was just diagnosing coverages instantly. One of his touchdowns to Kyron Williams over the middle, the linebacker steps forward to try and sell that he's going to blitz it as soon as the ball is snapped. Stafford sees him step forward. He knows he's not blitzing, but But because of that step forward, he's now too far upfield to cover Kyron Williams' angle route in behind him. So that means Stafford knows straight away, right, I don't need to worry what you're doing after this point. I'm throwing the ball right now and putting it at that spot that you vacated because I know my running back's going to be there before you can get there. And it was that kind of processing speed that was there all throughout the game. And it's that kind of thing that means you can go on a run with him if the rest of the pieces around you are just capable. Just be average. You don't even need to be above average or great. When a quarterback hits a tempo like that, hits a stretch like that, he can become unstoppable. The only big question mark I have with them is Cooper Kupp has very, very clearly lost a step. Now, maybe that's because of recent injuries and he's still working his way back into form. But it also could be that because once your hamstrings start to go, you go on that Larry Fitzgerald path where you wind up just slowing down and slowing down and slowing down forever.
Okay. James beat Lamar and gave one of the all-time weirdest post-match interviews that people have seen. Maybe they've seen it.
I haven't seen this. What's this post-match interview? Because he's got a history here.
I got to quote that white boy over in Detroit, Eminem, and then he goes into 8 Mile, and but really real earnest, slow, and like you know this is his moment. Having obviously thanked God first for giving him the victory against Lamar. God must hate Lamar for some reason. I don't know why. But he certainly was shining his light on Jameis Winston at the weekend.
That's not as bad as the eat a W speech that he gave, I'm guessing.
Well, that was ridiculous. The Browns have started to trade away their assets. Well, certainly they traded away their best wide receiver. And now all of a sudden they've beaten the Ravens and they have a chance of qualifying for the playoffs because they have a quarterback who isn't stinking the joint out.
I know.
Yeah, and you've got to give... Oh, go on, Mick.
No. I was just going to say he still was Jameis Winston. Like there was a the Ravens would have won
in the
that
post-match
game
interview and on the field.
If your man is at Hamilton for the Ravens didn't drop like an interception where he was the only one within 40 yards of the ball, and it's just like that's Jameis. Like he'll score for them and they'll be a completely different offense, but they're going to have so many turnovers. Like,
yeah, the Ravens consistently create their own problems. They dropped 2 interceptions at a minimum, probably 3. They had that big Rashad Bateman drop at the end of the game. Lamar didn't play well. He missed too many throws. He made too many poor plays, to be fair. So you can't necessarily just blame it on all the receivers and stuff like that. There was a couple of plays in this that really, really annoyed me, though. So the Ravens, to me, played this game like they were the less talented team. Like they had to try all these, not necessarily trick plays, but to be really, really creative and try and win in the margins and stuff like that. So on their first drive, they go to a wildcat play, which means you take your quarterback out from under center, you put him out wide, and you give the ball straight to the running back in Derrick Henry. Now that can work very well with Derrick Henry, and we've seen Derrick Henry actually throw touchdowns in the past. But when you've got Lamar Jackson, you've got a quarterback who's already a running threat. Moving him out wide and just committing fully to running the ball does not make any sense at all. Logically, based on the pieces you have. So it was 4th and 1. The offensive line couldn't block anyone because literally all 10 of the 11 defenders just decided to shoot forward once they saw that. And then in the fourth quarter, they put a tight end under center on 3rd and 1. And the tight end faked the snap and got flagged for a penalty to go back 5 yards. And you're just kind of going, why are the Ravens kind of have this small team mindset when they are one of the most talented teams in the league? They've got a head coach who's been there and done everything they need. They've got an MVP winning quarterback. Why aren't you better than this? But besides that, like, you're right. The Browns offense opened up with Jameis Winston. And to me, one of the an actual positive I can say about the Browns for the first time in a long, long time, Nick Chubb being back is just so, so, so good to watch. I thought his career was over. I did not think he'd be back. And the fact he came back and actually looks really good, breaking tackles, has a little bit of a burst, that's miracle stuff to me. I don't know how he's done that.
Yeah, so you put those two in the team and all of a sudden they're a different team because their defense has been great. And we talked briefly about Myles Garrett maybe being a trade target or off a trade. Now all of a sudden
I don't think so.
Play the season out, right?
And he's their franchise guy as well. Like they'd be slow enough to let him go. But again, I think so much comes back to the fact that a poor record is going to get the 7th seed in the AFC. You're not dead until you're dead. You know, so... Maybe, yeah. I think it's a long shot at this stage. But yeah, if they can be a reasonable team again. But it all comes back to the fact that they needed Deshaun Watson to get injured.
Yeah.
And so it's like, and he's taken up basically their entire cap space. Should we be in any... I know we have to move on, but I just think it's probably a question even for later in the year. But like, should we be concerned about the fact that the Ravens, who sometimes look like the best team in the NFL, have now lost 3 games this year and 2 of them have been to the Raiders and the Browns? Browns always have a little bit of a funny one with the Ravens. They always seem to play them well and they've good record against them. But they're like, obviously the Raiders are absolutely shocking. And they beat themselves in both of those games.
I think it's similar to the Chiefs in that we don't worry about the Chiefs because we know what they'll be at the end of the year in the playoffs. And obviously we don't worry about them as if they haven't won every single game so far this year. But we don't worry about their performance. I think it's similar with the Ravens. It's like we kind of expect you to beat yourself until you stop doing it. And importantly, stop doing it in the playoffs because they still did that in the playoffs last year as well. So I'm 100% with you. I'm fully on board with them being one of the top 2, 3, 4 teams in the league. But I think that says more about who else we expected to be the top teams rather than how well they've played so far this year, if that makes sense.
I should mention it was National Tight End Day. All the tight ends went off. They do seem to coordinate that they would all score touchdowns on the day of National Tight Ends Day.
They mentioned National Tight Ends Day a lot on the coverage. Yeah, it was exhausting.
The Lions obviously had no Jameson Williams. You're like, oh, they're not going to score any points this week. No, no, sir. No points, no Jameson. 50 odd easing up against Tennessee. Tell us about this.
Well, you're not exactly wrong if you said they're missing Jameson Williams and the offense didn't really function, because like this stat to me is mental. And it's just a true reflection of how different these two teams are. So by the end of the third quarter, Calvin Ridley had 143 receiving yards. What a game. You're thinking, my wide receiver has 143 receiving yards. Our offense must be humming. The whole Lions offense at 177 yards at the same point. The score was 49-14 to the Lions. Like, there's a difference of 30 yards between your whole offense and one of their players. So it was multiple special teams returns for touchdowns. It was turnovers with a backup quarterback on a bad team where they were just getting these short fields and capitalizing on them. Like, the Lions probably didn't play their best game, because if they did, they would have scored 70 or 80. I think the real takeaway from this is less about the Lions and more about the Titans. And I think, similar to the Carolina Panthers, that to me right now looks like a college football team. That besides the defensive line there, which plays very, very well consistently, you've got Jeffrey Simmons and the likes inside there, that's a football team that should be losing by 30 points every single week, I think. Like, if you look at Sean Payton came out after the Broncos game this week when they won by 14 against the Panthers, and he said, we won by 14 and it's a bad performance. We should be winning by much more than them. We've seen what that offense does elsewhere. I think you can talk the same way about the Titans at this point.
Did you see the stats from this game?
Outside of what Keane just said?
Yeah.
No.
So, Lions 52, Titans 14. How many yards do you think Jared Goff threw for? Obviously, the fact that I'm asking you this question means that you're
125.
85 yards.
Right.
85 yards, 3 touchdowns.
And a 49-point win.
Yeah.
But the most interesting part of this game was not the game itself. It was the aftermath, where Dan Campbell was giddy about a potential trade that's coming in that he says he can't tell anyone about yet. Now, there's a team, if they get a trade, if they bring in a big-name player, there's a team that can vault itself forward and go to the next level.
Well, we should briefly talk about the trades. Kansas City already have been busy. They brought in DeAndre Hopkins. He took the field. He's going to be decent. They've also signed the linebacker from the Patriots, who had an 11-sack season 2 years ago, who, you know, wasn't doing very much at the moment, but is exactly the type of mid-season that you add a veteran to, a player like that or a team like that, where their defense is excellent. You've got Chris Jones taking up all the pressure, and all of a sudden he comes in, has 5 sacks between now and the end of the season. They're so loaded, they can afford to do this.
Yeah, and it's a no-lose situation. They gave up a 6th-round pick for it. He hasn't been good, and he was a healthy scratch at the weekend, and he hasn't been a factor at all for the Patriots, but he goes into a much better situation at the Chiefs, and they've struggled on the outside, and you'll have Chris Jones doing all the work, and maybe there's a little bit of freedom on the outside, and suddenly he becomes a factor, and it's a really, really good pickup for the Chiefs. And again, if it doesn't work, it doesn't matter. So, you know, I this is smart business. From, like, this is what top teams should be doing, is like using the lure of people wanting to be there and just kind of
taking your
chances. Yeah.
I think the Hopkins trade is really good as well, because he gives them everything that they didn't have at wide receiver: a precision route runner, a guy with a big catch radius, a guy who, you know, will get open on down in distances like 3rd and 4, 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6, even though he's not the explosive athlete he was previously. I wouldn't, Deontay Johnson is going to be traded apparently over the next 7 days. And I'm surprised that there's such a market for him, because there wasn't one in the offseason. We spoke about that previously. But if I'm the Chiefs and I've got the opportunity, I'm probably trying to double down on that position again. Because not only do they still need another wide receiver, but the fact that you haven't gone out and gotten like a high-end target, a high-end player. Now, Hopkins, overall for the legacy of his career is a superstar and is probably a borderline Hall of Famer, but he's not at the stage of his career right now. So I would like to see them double down again and add another one, because you saw Worthy dropping passes at the weekend. You see the overall quality of their wide receiver corps is still not great. Juju Smith-Schuster, I know they were kind of happy with the way he was playing. He put up some numbers in a couple of weeks ago, but even when he's healthy, he's not great, and he's not healthy very often. So if I'm them, I'm trying to do even more. And like Mick said, when you're adding these smaller pieces to the Chiefs, it's a different thing than, let's say, if the Jets traded for Uche or something like that. Like, you're trying to rely on them then more than, realistically, you just need them to complement in the right role here.
Za'Darius Smith from the Browns was the other one who people were saying was up for, was going to be available. But you think now maybe the Browns might stick for a few weeks and see, as you say, to get into the playoffs.
Yeah.
What a turnaround for the franchise if they get into the playoffs without your man.
Absolutely, yeah.
Saves a lot of jobs.
It probably does, yeah. But it's like that's exactly what the Rams were doing. You mentioned Stafford earlier on. There was a lot of talk about Cup as well, and then it was like, hold on a second, we're not trading these guys. We're still in this season. They go out and win the game on Thursday night, and suddenly they're completely back into it. I think the Browns are probably feeling the same way, but there's still, I'd say, a few moves to be made. That, like, it is the trade, in-season trading is getting a little bit more interesting in the NFL every year. Oh. So, like, you know... keep that up.
Do the Jets still have all their picks from the Aaron Rodgers trade? Do they?
Can they give them back?
I think they gave up, was it the two last year?
Yeah, and that didn't...
Or, sorry, the year before last, and then the four last year, I think it was.
Okay. So anyway, look, it looks like they might have...
So they have their picks, yeah.
They're, as things stand, Carolina have the first pick, Tennessee have the second, the Patriots have the third, and the Jets have the fourth. Are they all...
It also...
Everybody except the Patriots picking a quarterback?
Well, that's what I was just thinking, but it really says how far Aaron Rodgers has fallen, that we've all just talked about these trades and all these opportunities, and we've got teams that need quarterbacks, and there's not even a discussion about it. Like, these, I don't think he'd bring anything back in at this stage, and probably the headache of him, people wouldn't necessarily want him. What's going to be really interesting there with the Jets and with that draft next year is, if they do try and move on to a rookie quarterback, you've kind of just got to cut him, don't you? Because he's not going to make your life easier developing a Drake May or something like that, is he?
No. He is going to stink that joint out and huff on the sidelines. So anyway, yeah, is there anything else you want to talk about from the weekend?
I think we're close to 40 minutes and we've never done this before, so let's try and actually do this for once.
The Patriots-Jets game was fun in that it was so bad. Like, it really was. Like, the Jets played down to their level. But I was watching, there was a few times when the Jets were chasing the game that I'm watching the Patriots defense. And it's like watching, like, a really bad team when you pick the worst team in a computer game to try and, like, play up, you know. And it's like they're just really slowly running after guys and they can't catch them. So how the Patriots managed to win a game after May got injured as well, Brissett came in and played well. It was actually kind of funny, to be honest. Like, and it just shows you where the Jets are. They will play down to the level of any team that they are playing. There's a lot of talent there, but it's not a good football team, and it looks like it's all just falling apart in a frankly hilarious way.
I should say, I really, really like Jacoby Brissett's quote afterwards, because he was just like, you guys don't know how much this means to me, kind of a thing. And it was kind of a stark reminder of, there's so many guys across the league who we can deride and criticise and all this kind of stuff, but they're really, really desperate to try and just make plays. And he made that one throw over the middle towards, I think it was to set up the game-winning field goal or whatever it was, but it was late in the fourth quarter. It was an outstanding throw. And it was the kind of thing that Jacoby Brissett did early in his career that made people think he could become more than what he became. And now that he's hanging around and now that he's still motivated to try and keep competing and stuff like that, that's going to extend his career. And it's a real positive moment.
We have seen teams who usually wait till the very last minute sack their coaches in the last 36 hours, Manchester United and Munster. Will the Dallas Cowboys follow suit? Is Jerry Jones looking at Skibbereen going, Skibbereen Eagle says I need to get rid of my manager here. Should I do it? Surely.
Should he? Yes. But, like, will he? No.
Why not?
Jerry. He doesn't make good decisions. He never has. We're 20 years waiting for Jerry to do something smart.
There's nothing to recommend this team at the minute. They were absolutely blown out for 3.5 quarters. Well, sorry, they were ahead at halftime. They're blown out in the third quarter of the game against the Niners. And I don't know. It just looks like they're completely stuck.
And that's a bad 49ers team right now, really, because it's lacking the explosiveness that we expected it to have coming into the year. Look, the Cowboys... The problem, I'm always in favour of firing Mike McCarthy because I think he's a horrible head coach, but I don't think it really fixes anything for them right now because they just don't have any talent. Like, the offence there is lacking pieces so much. You can't go into a season with Ezekiel Elliott as your running back at this stage of his career. You can't go in with the lack of wide receiver options apart from CeeDee Lamb and with a tight end situation that wasn't necessarily great. That's before we even talk about the offensive line and the defence being completely indisciplined. So there's major, major problems there. They need a lot of restructuring. Like, in a normal franchise, you'd be talking about moving Dak on in the offseason, hitting the full-on reset button. And that's not because Dak is bad. It's because the Cowboys are a mess. But being the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys is a whole other thing as well. Like, that's such a hard position to fill because it's got so much attention on it.
The running backs are so bad for the Cowboys that I actually think that alone is going to change the market for running backs. And we're going to go into it. And you and like Barkley's good season and a few of those free agents working out is going to, I think, make it a position that's valued again, purely because you throw Dowdle and Ezekiel Elliott in as your starter, as your only running backs. It shows that you actually can't just throw anyone in there and it's all about the system. They need to be a good running back.
All right.
Well, there's a good one for you. We'll finish on if you don't mind. The Saints had a fairly bad loss this weekend. The Saints have quarterback issues, obviously, and offense issues as a whole. But Alvin Kamara is still there, and Alvin Kamara still looks pretty good. If you're looking for a weapon, not necessarily a running back, but a guy who can play a bunch of different roles, go for him.
What would you trade to get Alvin Kamara now if you're in one of those competing teams?
He's 29. He just signed a 2-year extension, so he's locked down as well. So you'd have to give a bit for it, like.
I'm the worst person to ask because I'm like, if I've got a chance to win a Super Bowl, I'm going gung-ho. I'll give a first-round pick for him. But I know that's wrong. I know that the market value there will say that's wrong. But it's like, if I'm, let's say, like, who's the best idea here? If I'm the
Chiefs.
I'm trying to think of a fit. Chiefs, like, for example, like, the Chiefs have bloody Kareem Hunt running the ball for them right now. If you're the Chiefs and you're like...
Clyde Edwards-Helaire is just back from his PTSD. So he's
and look,
he's on the bench. Well, he's not. He hasn't been the match day squad yet, but...
And sure, look, if you're the Chiefs, what's a first round pick to you? I mean, it's going to be late. It's guaranteed to be late.
He's not a first. You get like you get a high end first.
Yeah.
Like, what do you think is right? So,
well, I would say if you were to spend a third round pick on a running back, people would think you're mad. I think McCaffrey costs a third and a fifth. Or maybe he did. Yeah, I think he costs a third and a fifth.
But so doesn't that look now like Carolina were absolutely ridden?
I mean, it does.
So it's like, there you go. The market could change. That's the point, you know?
If the other thing you have to think about here as well is, if you're a competing team, a first round pick is 25 to 32. It's not 1 to 10. So when I say first, that sounds more like a second to most people.
It's the 5th year control over a rookie who you think is going to be good enough to start on your team immediately. So it's massively valuable. I would certainly find
Patrick Mahomes will have 5 Super Bowls by then. What does it matter?
If I am the Saints, I'm taking a 3rd round pick. I'm taking a 1st round pick. I'm like, yeah.
First round, I think.
Fax over that. Drive
just
to the
calling me.
To sign it. Yeah. Kian, thanks very much. Mick, thank you very much. We'll see you next week.
US Sport.
On Off the Ball.
With 888 Casino. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.